This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
At this week's meeting, the Butte County Board of Supervisors agenda items 4.7 and 4.8 involve contract amendments with two local organizations that provide services through the Transitional Housing Placement Plus, or THP Plus program. The organizations are Northern California Youth and Family Programs and the Youth for Change. The THP Plus program is designed to assist former foster youth and other eligible young adults as they make the transition to adulthood. For many young people leaving foster care, finding stable housing, employment, and support services can be a significant challenge. Programs like THP Plus help bridge that gap by offering safe housing and supportive services during a critical period of independence. Butte County would continue working with Northern California Youth and Family Programs and Youth for Change to provide housing assistance and supportive services to eligible participants under the proposed amendments. These services often include case management, life skills training, educational support, employment assistance, budgeting guidance, and help securing permanent housing. The contract amendments would allow the programs to continue operating and serving eligible residents in Butte County. Supporters say the funding helps ensure that young adults who may not have traditional family support systems still have access to resources that can help them succeed. At the Board of Supervisors meeting, Tiffany Rowe states that
before you are items 4.7 and 4.8, these are contract amendments for transitional housing placement that we refer to as the THP Plus program. This program offers affordable housing and supportive services to former foster care and probation youth ages 18 to 25 who are transitioning from foster care to independent living. In the current fiscal year, the programs have served a total of 26 youth. For item 4.7, the department recommends the board approve this contract amendment with Northern California Youth and Family Programs, authorize the chair to sign extending the term of the contract through June 30th of 2027 and increasing the contract amount by $414,817, not to exceed a total amount of $1,048,476.
County leaders have increasingly emphasized the importance of addressing housing insecurity and providing support for vulnerable populations. Programs such as THP Plus are viewed as an important part of that effort, focusing on prevention and long-term stability rather than crisis response alone. Programs such as THP Plus are intended to provide a safety net during that transition by offering stable housing, case management, and connections to education and employment opportunities. These services can help participants establish a foundation for long-term success. Supporters of the program say investing in young adults today can help reduce future reliance on emergency shelters, public assistance programs, and other social services. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
Another mysterious death strikes a nerve. Hello, this is Micah from Game and Play for Zephyr News. This article was published May 29, 2026 by Jennifer Porter Gore. Once again, a black young person has been found hanged to death in a public space in the Deep South, the second time in less than a year. Once again, local authorities say it was suicide and warrants no further investigation. And once again, some black Americans aren't buying it. Judging by reactions on social media, the death of 16-year-old Juliana Nazita, found hanging from a tree on the grounds of a church near Charlotte, North Carolina, shouldn't be a closed case. Indeed, Nazita's death has ignited anger, spurred suspicion, and triggered painful historical memories across social media and inside several black communities. Echoes of a painful history. Like the case of a 21-year-old college student whose body was discovered last September under similar circumstances in Mississippi, Nazita's death raises the specter of an old and deeply American pattern. It echoes the terror lynchings of the Jim Crow South, an era in which black families and civil rights advocates questioned official explanations surrounding mysterious hangings. While police classified her death as suicide, critics point to unanswered questions, limited public information, and echoes of crimes that have never gotten justice. The teenager had been reporting missing on April 28th. A community member named Kenneth Tolbert made the discovery, told church officials, then dialed 911. Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department officers then found Nazita's body on May 8th, 2026, on property belonging to the United House of Prayer for All People. Lingering questions. Police classified the death as a suicide, and investigators also said Nazita's family didn't respond when initially contacted, but no formal statement about the case appears on the department's website. And there's no indication that police have reopened the investigation into Nazita's initial disappearance or launched a homicide inquiry into her death. Neither the House of Prayer for All People nor any of its leadership has issued any public statement about Nazita's death. The lack of information, as well as the police department's conclusion that no foul play was involved, has provoked widespread suspicion about the case. Videos expressing concern, distress, and outrage have appeared on all social media platforms, and some of the social media posts show community members calling out church leaders by name for failing to comment. Troubling pattern. Commenters on local news websites have questioned the physical circumstances of the discovery. Some want to know why there's no closed circuit or security camera footage of Nazita. Others have questioned the evidence found at the scene, including whether Nazita could have used the blue chair seen in the footage to commit suicide. A report the civil rights organization Julian, which publishes the Crimson Record, issued this year identified over 70 deaths classified as suicides despite questionable circumstances over the last 25 years. They have stretched across seven Deep South states, with Mississippi reporting 20, the highest total. A review of known cases of Black Americans found dead by hanging between 2024 and 2026 shows that approximately 10 of them gained significant attention from civil rights advocates, family members, and legal experts. Many have raised serious questions about inadequate or hasty investigations and official rulings of suicide, despite families and advocates disputing those conclusions. These cases include Demetravion Trey Reed, whose body was found last September hanging from a tree near the pickleball courts on the Delta State University campus. He was pronounced dead at the scene, and an autopsy by the Mississippi State Medical Examiner determined the death was a suicide. Reed's family vehemently disputed the ruling, insisting he had no history of depression, was excited about attending Delta State, and had shown no signs of suicidal ideation. The family sought an independent autopsy after receiving conflicting accounts and incomplete information about the circumstances of his death. That is all for this article. You can find it on The Observer, and this was Micah from Game and Play for Zephyr News.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
A long-awaited restoration effort in Upper Bidwell Park is making steady progress as crews continue working on the Iron Canyon Fish Passage Project along Big Chico Creek. The project is aimed at reopening important migration routes for spring run Chinook, salmon, and steelhead trout. Species that have struggled for decades in reach upstream spawning habitat. For many years, an outdated fish ladder at Iron Canyon has prevented fish from moving naturally through the creek. Built in the 1950s, the structure has deteriorated and no longer functions effectively during different water flows. Environmental groups and local agencies say restoring this passage is critical for improving the health of the creek and supporting native fish populations. The restoration effort is being led by California trout, or Caltrout, along with the Mechupta tribe, the city of Chico, and several state and federal partners. Together, they hope to reconnect roughly 8.5 miles of historic habitat upstream of Iron Canyon, giving salmon and steelhead access to cold water areas that are essential for spawning and survival during hot summer months. Instead of building a large concrete structure, crews are creating what's called a nature-like fishway. Workers are reshaping the creek with carefully placed boulders and pools that mimic natural stream conditions. The design allows fish to rest as they move upstream and is intended to be more resilient during floods and changing water conditions. They say that this project is about more than fish. Scientists say restoring salmon habitat can improve the overall health of the ecosystem because salmon bring ocean nutrients back into inland waterways, benefiting plants, birds, and other wildlife. Big Chico Creek supports a wide range of native species, and improving connectivity in the creek is expected to strengthen the entire ecosystem. The restoration also has deep cultural importance. The site lies within an ancestral fishing area of the Mechupta tribe, whose representatives have been involved throughout the planning process. Tribal members will also help with the native plant restoration once construction is completed, combining traditional ecological knowledge with modern restoration practices. While construction may continue into 2027, supporters say the project represents one of the most significant habitat restoration efforts in the region. Once completed, salmon and steelhead should be able to reach upstream, spawning and refuge areas that have been largely inaccessible for generations. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. California State Controller Malia M. Cohen announced that the State Controller's Office is mailing letters to 130,000 Californians who may be owed money through the state's unclaimed property program. Individuals were identified through a partnership between the State Controller's Office and the Franchise Tax Board, matching unclaimed property records with state tax records. Those fortunate enough to receive a letter can use the unique claim code included to verify their information in an online process. The city of Chico announced that it will be celebrating the completion of the Notre Dame Bridge over Little Chico Creek with a ribbon-cutting ceremony next Thursday, June 18th at 10 a.m. The project included the construction of a new multimodal Class 1 bike path along the northern bank of the creek, connecting the Notre Dame Bridge to the new Chico Bike Park, and the rehabilitation of the existing Little Chico Creek bike path on the south side of the creek from Notre Dame Boulevard east to Bruce Road. After hearing from several upset individuals, Zephyr News reported 2 weeks ago that the Chico Area Recreation District, or CARD, had canceled all outdoor adult sports leagues for the summer. After an emergency meeting involving its board of directors, CARD reversed its decision. Players should check the CARD website for current registration information and schedules. Paradise Town Council held a long meeting Tuesday evening. Jason Finney, Assistant Chief CAL FIRE North Division Operations, addressed the outlook for fire season. He stated that CAL FIRE's goal is to keep all incidents under 10 acres. Chief Finney presented these facts. March was the hottest recorded in California since 1895. Temperatures in Northern California averaged 12 to 13 degrees above normal. There was less than 1/4 inch of precipitation in March, 80% below normal. Nearly 3,500 lightning strikes occurred during May, resulting in several small fires in the Jarbo Gap area. Snowpacks are much lower than usual, and an abnormally hot March combined with multiple rainy days caused a secondary growth of the grass crop, which is now 4 to 6 inches high in many areas.
So a quick fuels review for this last year. Obviously, we touched on it, the abnormally hot March combined with multiple rains caused a second grass crop. Dead fuel moistures are highly receptive to ignition with below normal moisture. Fine fuels that we already talked about, they're rapidly curing. We just had a 10-acre grass fire down in Palermo this afternoon. Had about 50 acres about a week and a half ago, so the grass is burning. This week, we have some north winds coming up. We're under a fire weather watch. I believe they're upgrading to a red flag warning for later this week. We've canceled burning Wednesday, Thursday, Friday this week, and then fire season will come to an, or excuse me, burning will come to a, the burn ban will start Monday, January 15th, or excuse me, June 15th, June 15th. So that will be coming, and we'll put that on social media as well. So overall, fuel trends are accelerating towards drier conditions driven by limited snowpack, which we talked about. And snow crush, really one of the contributing factors in the park fire, in my opinion. We had that really heavy, wet snow, and that what it does is it gets into that fuel model that's not used to having that heavy, wet snow. It breaks those branches off. They cure out. Now you have a more of a dead component in your fuel model. So we saw that again this year, right? Remember in February we had that low snow event. Paradise was a mess. Magalia was a mess. So they're concerned about that again in that 1,000 to 1,500-foot belt where we got that heavy, wet snow. It starts breaking those fuels down a little bit. You get dead branches in there. It makes them burn hotter and more receptive to fire. So something on the radar that we are watching.
Chief Finney enumerated CAL FIRE's Butte unit response capabilities. Among them are 430 career firefighters and support staff, 151 volunteer firefighters, 23 fire stations, 29 fire engines, 2 ladder trucks, 1 Type 2 rescue vehicle, and 2 bulldozers. The Chico Air Attack Base at the Chico Airport has an Air Attack OV-10 Bronco, 1 air tanker and 2 fire copters totaling 4,700 gallons, 4 drones with operators, and a C-130 planned for 2027. Chief Finney urged everyone to sign up for the Smart 911 Emergency Alert System.
Just wanted to briefly remind everybody, please, if you can, sign up for the Smart 911. I know Chief Reinbold and his staff and the town has put out a lot of information on that. that's critical for us to communicate with the public. There's other avenues out there, social media, but this is how it comes from the officials here in town and the county. So even if you're signed up for the county, you did it early, we ask you to go back in there and just make sure you click the box for Paradise as well, so you get notified from both entities.
Crystal Peters, Human Resources and Risk Management, provided an update on job vacancies and recruitment and retention efforts. She said there are only 3 vacancies for 103 budgeted positions. The town renewed incentives for police and public safety hires. However, she continues to see higher pay and incentives offered by neighboring agencies. Mark Maddox, assistant town manager, provided the first annual financial health and organizational impact report. He said the town's recovery has largely met or exceeded expectations. Financial resources exceed 2023 model projections. Projected annual revenues are $11.4 million with $14 million in liquid assets, and total financial resources, which include investments and pending reimbursements, are $209 million. This is David Foose for Zephyr News.
From KQED.
Good morning. This is the California Report. I'm Mati Bolaños in San Francisco. Republican Steve Hilton is advancing to the general election for California governor, edging out Democrat Tom Steyer for the second spot in the November race. KQED politics correspondent Guy Marzorati has more.
Hilton, a former political advisor in the UK and Fox News host, will face Democrat Javier Becerra in the fall. Hilton was able to consolidate support from California Republicans after an endorsement from President Donald Trump. That support helped him edge out Steyer, a Democrat who spent a record $216 million of his own money on a campaign built on progressive calls for new taxes on corporations. Hilton will attempt to become the first Republican elected governor in California in 20 years. For the California Report, I'm Guy Marzorati.
Before the governor's race was called, Hilton joined other Republicans in Southern California, calling for changes to the way votes are counted in the state. This comes after baseless claims from President Trump that the state's election system is rigged. When asked at a press conference yesterday if he would categorize the election as rigged, Hilton wouldn't go that far, but adds,
"We take all of this very seriously because it's incredibly important that Californians have the chance to vote for change. And so we got to make sure that nothing untoward happens."
He says the counting of votes needs to be faster and that the state should require voter ID and only send out mail-in ballots to people who ask for one. Voters in Shasta County appear to be rejecting a controversial county clerk who's been trying to implement major reforms to the election system there. Roman Battaglia from Jefferson Public Radio reports.
This closely watched race has become a referendum on how elections should be run in Shasta County. After preliminary results from election night, former assistant county clerk Joanna Franciscat is leading over incumbent Clint Curtis by almost 2,700 votes. Curtis was appointed by county supervisors last year, despite having no elections experience. He then made some major changes, like ditching electronic poll books used to check in voters. Curtis fired Franciscat just weeks after taking office. Franciscat has 17 years of experience and campaigned on restoring stability to the office. If Franciscat ultimately wins, she won't take office till January, when Curtis's term ends. For the California Report, I'm Roman Battaglia.
San Francisco drone delivery company Zipline hopes to one day fly your burrito and other consumer goods right to your front door. It's already doing so in Dallas and elsewhere across the country. But before it can expand, Zipline's drones are flying thousands of test missions above a serene Yolo County cattle ranch near Esparto. Cap Radio's Chris Nichols takes us there.
Didn't bring your cowboy hat?
Rancher Casey Stone calls it the Space Center. Dozens of white drones with flashing green and red lights take to the sky. They're hovering over the middle of his 7,500-acre cattle ranch. Two-story tall drone docking towers wait for their return. Zipline engineers monitor their flight from the ground below.
My analogy is when you're seeing in close encounters where they're climbing around the mountain and they look down and see the extraterrestrial space station there. That's kind of what it is.
The aircraft operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They fly hundreds of feet above the Yolo Land and Cattle Company's green pastures and rolling hills. The ranch is about 40 miles west of Sacramento. Zipline's Mike Rigby is in charge of the drone testing. His company believes its technology will be a game changer, one that takes millions of delivery cars and trucks off the road and replaces them with faster electric-powered aircraft.
As our CEO famously likes to say, you don't need a 4,000-pound vehicle to chauffeur your burrito to you. We can do that a lot more economically and efficiently through this aircraft.
Zipline drones carry up to 8 pounds of goods. The company can fit everything from medicine to groceries to gardening supplies inside the 6-foot-long aircraft. But rather than touching down outside your home or office, the drones themselves stay high above. Rigby explains what happens next, and no, this isn't science fiction. It's happening.
And then the delivery zip is a small little droid unit that comes out of the belly of the aircraft on a tether, and it has its own propulsion system as well, so it's kind of a sub-aircraft.
That droid unit has your delivery inside. The goal is to gently drop your order from Chipotle, Crumble Cookies, or Walmart, all Zipline partners, at the desired location.
All right, so this place was started back in, this is our 50th year.
But to get their deliveries just right, Zipline needs wide-open testing sites. Driving inside Scott Stone's ATV, you can see his ranch makes the perfect venue. Brothers Scott and Casey Stone manage the Yolo Land and Cattle Company. The ranch is dotted with majestic oaks and black Angus cattle. It's largely hidden behind mountains and foothills.
We raise cows that have babies every year. Right. We raise those up.
But it's far more than just a cattle ranch. It's served as a backdrop for films and TV ads. The ranch makes money off its compost production. They have a carbon sink and a real estate business. Scott Stone says traditional ag companies need to get creative to survive. That's why he said yes when Zipline approached him a decade ago. And importantly, the cows don't seem to mind the drones.
We've never had any issues with any cows, A, being struck by the drones, or B, bothered by them.
Scott Stone says his family also admires Zipline's values. They were impressed with how the company got its start, delivering medicine to remote villages in Africa, and wanted to be part of what's next.
There are so many benefits to what these folks are doing out here on so many levels, and it's working hand in hand with agriculture. It's not to the detriment of agriculture, it's not to the detriment of the ranch, it's to the benefit of mankind.
While Zipline perfects its deliveries, the Stone Ranch will be home to even more aircraft. The Yolo County Planning Commission last fall gave the green light for expanded testing. For the California Report, I'm Chris Nichols in Yolo County.
Zephyr News is produced by Trevor Parks, Lorenz Weissel, and KZFR volunteers. Listeners may send tips for stories to news@kzfr.org or by using the Submit a Story icon on kzfr.org. This program is made possible by the financial support of listeners like you. You can support KZFR's journalistic endeavors by visiting kzfr.org/donate. Subscribe to Zephyr News on your favorite podcast platform and share your thoughts on social media. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week.